And then as soon as I put my first book out talking about dietary principles, paleo, ancestral eating, that's when the media shifted. It basically became, instead of supportive, it became aggressive.
Just when you think you've like sort of dialed in these different aspects of your life, you find some new rabbit hole to go down and you're like, oh, I can't believe I'm still doing that. Like that's a fiat thing.
Once you see Bitcoin for what it represents, it ticks so many boxes of I guess, the journey that I went through.
What does tick for you? Because it's not going to be identical for everybody because of your ancestral biological reality, where you live and operate. To your point, these 10 other variables in your life, the stress, the relationship, you know, the social relationships.
And we showcased Indigenous Australians reversing type 2 diabetes over a two-week period. We showcased a child with autism that changed their diet, that became, the behavior changed miraculously.
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Today on the show, I have celebrity chef Pete Evans. Pete is an awesome guy. I got to meet with him in BTC Prague. He came up after my speech. We talked for a bit. He gave me an awesome cookbook. We talk about ancestral eating. We talk about Bitcoin, him being canceled in Australia during COVID. So we had all the hot topics. Really think you will enjoy this show. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got Pete here. Pete, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Hey Mike, thank you so much for having me. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well. So the backstory here is Pete and I got to meet at BTC Prague a couple weeks ago and only got to chat briefly. You gave me an awesome gift though, the Primal Code. So you're going to have to talk a little bit about this, what it is. And I read sort of the whole intro leading up to, I'll say the recipes, and then we'll leave it at that. Before we jump in, I have a feeling there are probably a lot. When I looked you up online after you told me who you were, and I was like, you kind of looked familiar. I don't really follow your world, so I wouldn't have been able to put the face with the name. Tell people who you are, and then we're gonna jump into why you got canceled.
Sure. G'day everyone that's watching and listening to, and pleasure to be here. Wow, that's a big question. So I guess for the USA audience that you have, I used to host a TV series on PBS for 8 years leading up to the COVID sort of shutdowns. It was called A Movable Feast. Great little cooking and travel show where I would land in a different state in the United States and I would work with two of the top chefs, two of the most well-known chefs that were good friends, and they'd take me around their local area where they get their fish or seafood or to some farms where they get their meat from, or some beautiful shops where they go shopping for their spices, this, that, and the other. And then we'd all come together and we'd all do a recipe or two for a group of people. That's why it's called Movable Feast. So I spent 8 years traveling probably through 30 to 35 different states of the United States, and I'd spend 4 to 6 weeks per year there. It was such a bloody eye-opening, beautiful experience because America has some of the most forward-thinking people that I've come across in the food and the health and the agricultural, regenerative agricultural space, and just really cool people. And so I got to do that. And at the same time, for the Australian, New Zealand, Canadians, UK audience, you might know me from a TV show I did called My Kitchen Rules. And My Kitchen Rules was sort of like the equivalent of a Master Chef or a Top Chef. It was the number one commercial TV program in Australia for about 11 years, give or take. It sometimes was number one, sometimes it was number two, sometimes it was number three, but full mainstream media, commercial television, and I was one of the hosts. So I became a household name in many different parts of the world that aired this TV show, had a couple of million followers, and released 30 cookbooks or 30 plus cookbooks throughout the world, sold millions of a million copies. And also during that period, I became really fascinated about 15 years ago. My wife and I discovered ancestral diets, and we made a documentary which we self-funded called The Magic Pill, which ended up on Netflix exclusively for 2 years globally. So no doubt tens of millions or hundreds of millions of people would have seen that. And Yeah, it's been a wonderful journey. So taking a step backwards, professional chef for 30 years, opened five award-winning restaurants, and then the celebrity chef sort of world came about 20 years ago, which coincided with TV shows, cookbooks, documentaries, and the like. And so fascinated about long-term regenerative health for the last 15 years, and also extremely inspired and fascinated by Bitcoin over the last 5 years was when I got orange-pilled. Yeah, give or take 5 to 6 years ago. So got to speak at Bitcoin Prague this year and also Bitcoin Vegas, which was pretty cool, meeting the Bitcoin crew. They were my first conferences, and it was such a treat. Got to meet you, and you gave such an amazing speech, brother. And yeah, thank you for that. So that gives you a little bit of a background to who I am.
Yeah.
Chef, sharing recipes.
Okay, that's incredible. So, I mean, so many places we could take this. So you kind of went in the reverse order. So most, what happens, just, you know, most of us find Bitcoin, and then all of a sudden, like 8 months later, we're carnivores, and we're, you know, we don't believe anything we've been taught in history books, and we're libertarians and all these things. You found 15 years ago, you started going down this path of like a health journey. Was there, this is just my curiosity, we don't need to linger on this, but was there something that, like, was there a health issue that you had, or just like a discovery that you came across that sort of led you on that journey? And what was the conclusion? Because you talk about paleo, keto. What's sort of the final conclusion you reached when you began that 15 years ago?
Yeah, a couple of things coincided. One was an extra chin or two here, bloating around all the different parts of my body. And
been there.
Been there. And that was in my late 30s. I was like, I don't think this is the way it's meant to actually be, even though it's quite normal and common for people to be inflamed and overweight and lethargic and ill health. You know, we've been brainwashed to believe that that is our natural progression in life. And my wife was reading a book called Primal Body, Primal Mind by Nora Gagauder. So fascinating and very powerful book. I've listed her book, Primal Body, Primal Mind, as the most powerful book over the last two decades, and Safadine's Bitcoin Standard, the most powerful book over the last decade. So, and I don't say those words lightly. I think both of those books have so much to offer people that want to live a long, healthy lifestyle and secure their wealth. You know, there's no point having one without the other, as we come to quickly realize as we are aging. So that was one of the reasons. And my daughter was also, my first daughter was born with a tumor. And that got me thinking, like, this isn't normal either for a child to be born with something out of balance or out of harmony. So when my wife read that book, she suggested I read it. So I read it, and it just clicked. Everything sort of made sense for me, very much like Bitcoin makes sense for a lot of people when they read the Bitcoin Standard or listen to 10 hours of people like yourself talking about it. Like, you get orange-pilled, and other people get ancestral-pilled, ancestral diet-pilled, so to speak. So implemented that 15 years ago. Chins disappeared. Could see six pack down there, and vitality went through the roof, and it's been an uphill, in a nice way, journey over the last 15 years. And I'm just about to turn 52 in a month's time, and I went surfing this morning for a couple of hours, and life's great. You know, I don't have the brain fog, I don't have the lethargy, I don't have the inflammation, I don't have the bloating, I don't have that normalness that so many people just go with, so to speak. Obviously, proof of work, which I talk about in the book, you know, which Satoshi talked about, proof of work in understanding Bitcoin. Sailor says put in the time to study and understand Bitcoin, proof of work for mining the Bitcoin, and then proof of work for looking after your own health, you know, spending the time understanding what makes our bodies thrive and taking away the foods that cause inflammation. So we could talk about the different dietary approaches that sort of fall under ancestral or primal eating, if you like, I'm happy to go there.
Yeah, let's. I have a feeling anyone listening is gonna they want like the Cliff Notes version of like, okay, well, what did you find? Like, what's the answer? What do I need to do? You know, give me the check boxes that I can cross off. How would you sort of summarize what you've uncovered?
Yeah, I like to say first and foremost that food can be a very, very powerful tool for us, but it's not the be all and end all. Like, we can eat all the most beautiful, like carnivore or organic food in the world, but if we have stress in our lives, whether it be financial stress or emotional stress with relationships or purpose or whatever it may be, you know, that food isn't going to save you from disease. You know, it's just one of the, what I like to call the legs of the table that give us stability and can give us that grounding and support. So obviously sleep, what we drink, who we associate with, are we doom scrolling, are we getting into nature, all of these other factors or these legs of the table, which once we can identify them, which I do my best to identify in the book too, hodling your health, not just in relation to food, but all of these other factors, just to bring awareness to it. And ultimately, each and every one of us knows where we're out of balance. If, for instance, we're doing a job that we hate, you know, we know that that can cause us disease. If we're in a relationship with somebody that is no longer fulfilling for us and which we feel trapped, that can create disease for us. If we're living in a location in the world, like we just had a little chat about before, you said, what's it like living in Australia? You know, for some people, living in Australia or living in Canada or living in the United States or wherever it may be can cause dis-ease, whether it be through the bureaucracy or the tax system or the laws or whatever it may be, can cause disease. So I just want to say that first and foremost, but food, from what I've experienced and what others have shared with me, can be the quickest catalyst for improving vitality and health, which then gives us the opportunity and the energy to look at the other parts of our life, which may be out of disharmony or out of balance, for us to then have the energy to go, all right, fuck, let's take a deep dive into my belief system or all of those other things that I discussed before. So, in a nutshell, each and every one of us is different. And I do not prescribe to a one-size-fits-all dietary approach. And I would caution anybody that says this is the diet for you. Because, Michael, what I've come to realize is your life story is your medicine. For you to pull on the threads of what I was just talking about, your belief systems, where you feel weaknesses or insecurities in your experience, that's the medicine for you to pull on those threads and rewrite your story in relation to that. Now, for some, you know, going carnivore might be a wonderful prescription for them for a period of time. I've interviewed many of the carnivore experts out there, Dr. Sean Baker, Paul Saladino, Michaela Peterson, and the list goes on and on. And most of them, and even Saffordine, you know, he's been carnivore for 8 years. And when I had him on the podcast, he said, I just eat meat, salt, water, you know, pretty much. And he's thriving. Now, you do that for somebody else and they might not thrive because of some of the other issues that we've spoken about, right? So by definition, whether you believe in this or not, but the definition of a human being is we're omnivores. So we can consume both plants and animals. We're not listed or defined as carnivores, and we're not listed or defined as herbivores or vegetarians. So I like to always reside into common sense and looking back at our ancestors or ancient wisdom for as long as possible and take cues from them. And the most obvious cue is we're hunter-gatherers. That's what we have been for the majority of our existence. Now, where that can get tricky for people is their beliefs, whether they're creationists, evolutionists, whatever they believe, whether we come from the Anunnaki or had our DNA changed through whatever alien intervention. I mean, there's so many different theories out there and beliefs that people hold on to. I like to keep it simple. What are human beings? Human beings have evolved, I believe, from hunter-gatherers, and our biology still supports that way of eating. And if you look at the work of, say, Weston A. Price, who wrote probably the most important book of the last century called Physical and Nutritional Degeneration, he was a dentist that traveled across the world looking at tribal communities. About 100 years ago, him and his wife spent 20, 30 years studying different tribal communities around the world and discovered that they didn't suffer from chronic illness like we do as a population does now. They didn't have autism. They didn't have chronic heart disease. They didn't have cancer. They didn't have depression. They didn't have Alzheimer's. They didn't have all these diagnoses that exist today. And what him and his wife discovered was they were eating an ancestral or primal approach. They all had meat. They all gathered what was seasonal, what was local, and they combined that in their geographic location, and they ate seasonally. And when they hunted, they ate the whole animal, nose to tail. Nothing was wasted. Everything was shared. So I like to mimic that as much as possible in the modern world. Now, for some people, and this is where it becomes sort of interesting for individuals. Like I was saying, we're all so unique. So many people these days have autoimmune disease. They have heart disease. They have obesity, or they're overweight, or they have depression or anxiety, and the list goes on and on and on. So discovering the path forward regarding food, as I outlined in the Primal Code, we have different options out there. We have paleo, which is basically the oldest way of eating, which is hunting and gathering in a modern day world. So including plant-based foods and animal-based foods and eating nose to tail, eating good quality saturated fat. People with autoimmune disease, I've got a section in there for autoimmune paleo. So with paleo, generally what we remove as the most common inflammatory foods for the majority of people, not everybody, but for the majority of people, and this is why people seem to get a lot better with their health diagnosis when they adopt a paleo lifestyle, is paleo removes grains, legumes, and modern dairy, eliminates that for a period of time. And for some people, eliminating that for 3 to 6 months can put their autoimmune disease into remission. It can reverse type 2 diabetes in a matter of 2 to 3 months. And the list goes on and on. Increase mental clarity, brain fogginess can disappear. Mood behavior or behavioral changes can happen quite rapidly as well. So that's paleo. Autoimmune paleo takes away the grains, the legumes, the modern dairy, and also eliminates nightshades and nuts, eggs, seeds, because a lot of people find these foods problematic for themselves, or they're sensitive to it, or they're allergic to it. Carnivore takes it to the next step, which removes all plant-based material from their diet. And the reason I believe that carnivore works so well is because so many of our plant materials have been sprayed with glyphosate, chemicals, herbicides, fungicides, pesticides, and the list goes on. So, and if we look at something like glyphosate, what it actually is a low-level antibiotic. So when people are eating non-organic plant-based foods, they're basically taking a low-level antibiotic daily, which disrupts their gut microbiome. And without a healthy gut microbiome and a flourishing gut biome, that's where we can suffer disease. So carnivore works really well because it takes away that plant material that can be, I guess, hijacked by these chemicals. And meat and seafood from good sources seem to be the least inflammatory foods for human beings. So when we adopt that for a period of time, whether it be 3 months, 6 months, a year, or a couple of years, it gives our gut an opportunity to heal and repair itself. So then ideally, we can in the future start to incorporate certain plant foods into our diet if we choose to. I don't think they're necessarily 100% essential in the amounts that we're told to eat, but I'm a chef and I love using herbs and spices. I just think they bring food to life. And when we look back at our ancestors, our ancient ancestors, they were thriving on including some plant-based food into their diet, whether it was spices, whether it was herbs, whether it was seasonal wild bushes or shrubs or whatever it may be, or tubers, sweet potatoes, these types of things, and yams. So, yeah, that's sort of the idea behind the primal code. And I talk about ketogenic eating. And when I was introduced to paleo through Nora Gigaudis's book, Primal Body, Primal Mind, that I talked about before, she talked about paleo as a ketogenic style of eating. So the best way to illustrate this is the analogy I like to use is most people on a Western style diet that are following the dietary guidelines, it's a very high carbohydrate based eating protocol, so to speak. And there's been many books and documentaries created to expose why that was created in the first place and why it's based on corruption, and the list goes on and on. I won't spoil the rabbit hole for you if you haven't been down that rabbit hole before. But so the modern dietary guidelines promotes a high carbohydrate diet. So if you've ever built a fire before and wanted to keep it going, you build a fire with kindling, small pieces of wood. That's the equivalent of eating carbohydrates. They burn very rapidly and quick energy, and then they dissipate. So if you wanted to keep a fire going all day long and all night long, and all you had to use was kindling, small bits of wood, you would have to constantly be putting that kindling onto the fire. Now, that's the equivalent of how most people in the West eat. They're having a high carbohydrate diet, which is like the kindling that burns very quickly, rapid energy, and then the crash. Rapid energy, and then the crash, which is why people overeat. Now, they overeat and become overweight and obese and inflamed because their body is giving them the signals, I'm starving. You're not nourishing me. You're not giving me the good quality fats and the proteins that I am designed to eat from our ancient ancestral evolutionary history. Our biology loves putting on some big fat logs on our internal fire. So when you do have a fire going and you want to keep it going for a long time, what you do is you throw some big fat logs on. That means you don't have to put as many logs onto the fire as often. Now, when we equate that to good quality animal source protein and fats, that's why when people adapt or adopt a paleo, ketogenic, carnivore lifestyle, they only feel like eating once or twice or three times a day instead of four, five, six times of constantly grazing, constantly throwing that kindling onto their internal fire to keep the lights on. Whereas the ketogenic and the ancestral crew, they're just throwing a big log on whenever they feel like it. And for some, it's once a day. For some, it's twice a day. For some, it's three times a day. Very rarely do you find people in the ancestral world or the carnivore world or the paleo ketogenic world eating more than two to three times per day, because their bodies are having the signals when you're eating a good quality steak or some fatty seafood, or a little bit of low carbohydrate veg or fruit. The body's getting the signal, I'm satiated, I'm good. You don't have to put any more fuel on the fire until I start to slowly burn out, you know. And this is called metabolically flexible. So, I talk about it in the book. And this is why it can get confusing for people, because some people go, you know, you should only eat once a day and intermittent fast 16 hours a day. And other people are like, no, you got to eat two times a day. And you got breakfast is the most important meal of the day. And you should only do carnivore, or you should only do plant-based. So there's so much freaking noise out there in the space. It's literally the equivalent of shitcoiners in the cryptocurrency space, Bitcoin space. There's so much noise and confusion in the crypto space. And I don't even like to use the word crypto because I'm only Bitcoin, but also in the health space. And I believe there's a simple solution. If we focus on the fundamental principles, And this is how I teach people. My wife and I run a wellness retreat, which we do cooking retreats and wellness retreats. And I say, if you can just fill your plate with the most beautiful, well-sourced meat and or seafood, and if you can tolerate it, have some veg or some fruit or some herbs or some spices, but don't make the vegetables the main part of your meal, you know, you will get satiated, you will feel great, you won't get bloated, and you will feel $1 million or 10 Bitcoin, and rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. And then you might want to try intermittent fasting if you've never done it before and skip a breakfast or skip a dinner once a week. And if you feel good like that, maybe next week try it 2 times a week and see how that goes. I generally eat once or twice a day, and I feel better when I eat after my surf. I surf most days. My first meal is usually at midday. My last meal is usually at 4 or 5 o'clock, and that's it. And but that works for me, whereas other people need to eat, feel like they should be eating more, depending on your physical activity and what you're wishing to achieve. You know, if you want to build huge muscles, eat more food and work out more, you know, and you might find that fire needs more fuel because of your external workload. Or if you're working out of the field, farming or doing something strenuous, you might need to fill that fire or build that fire a little bit more often than someone like me who just cruises on a surfboard and comes back and doesn't really do too much physical activity.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think for anyone listening, one of the things I've learned is that because, to your point, there's so much noise around health, diet, all of these topics, you really do have to kind of figure out what works for you. Because in sort of my, there's a part of me that has this propensity to assume, well, humans are effectively all the same, like biologically, we're all very similar. But I mean, ancestrally, we grew up at different altitudes. We live at different altitudes today, different latitudes today and different altitudes, right? So we have different local foods. We have different ability to consume more amounts of meat or less amounts of meat, or probably more specifically, more fruits or things like that. You know, if you live in the Arctic, you're probably going to eat pretty much meat or seafood or what have you.
Exactly.
So I think there are those considerations. What I've learned is, because I did carnivore for 18 months or so, it felt really good until I didn't. And I'm not quite sure if it was, maybe my macros were off, but I don't have to think that hard about it, right? Like, I mean, ancestrally, you're not counting macros and calories and that sort of thing. And so the benefit I experienced on carnivore was my addiction to like sweets, it was completely broken. And I could just slam a pack of Oreos or, you know, you name it. I could do it. And so carnivore really benefited me in that way. As I started reincorporating, I haven't eaten vegetables, with the exception of, some roots. So occasional potatoes, mostly sweet potatoes, but basically fruit, raw honey, raw milk, and meat, and a mixture of some liver, kidney, and beef heart in there. That seems to work best for me. I try to go local, organic, all of those things best I can. But it's still kind of, you know, figuring out what's this, like, what does tick for you? Because it's not going to be identical for everybody because of your ancestral biological reality, where you live and operate. To your point, these 10 other variables in your life, the stress, the relationship, you know, the social relationships, your work, all of these other things that impact you might demand different things of your body to varying degrees. So I think that's really smart. So Pete, you haven't, all of this seems very practical. You haven't said anything real controversial, and yet you found yourself banned, canceled in Australia. Can you tell the story of what happened, when it happened, why it happened, and sort of the fallout you've experienced?
Yeah, it was interesting. It was COVID that really brought it all to a point of cancellation.
Yeah.
But but interestingly enough, as I mentioned, I was hosting one of Australia's top TV programs on commercial television for quite some time. And previous to talking about dietary health, I was left alone. You know, I was celebrated and, you know, just like other celebrities, just kid next door, doing well, and celebrated. And then as soon as I put my first book out talking about dietary principles, paleo, ancestral eating, that's when the media shifted. It basically became, instead of supportive, it became aggressive. And the slanderous articles started coming out 15 years ago or 14 years ago with the release of my first book about ancestral eating. Because that book went to number one in Australia, in not only in cookbooks but in nonfiction for the whole year, so it was quickly denounced, and there was a concerted effort, PR campaigns from the dietitians associations, no doubt, possibly as well from the medical associations, to plant doubt into the general public or the population's mind that I was spreading dangerous information by telling people exactly what I was just telling you, which you seem as, it's pretty fucking practical.
Makes sense.
You know, looking at our ancestors, they didn't suffer from ill health. Why don't we try to mimic them in the 21st century? Like, eating organic, supporting regenerative farms, eating sustainable seafood. If you're going to eat fruit and veg, look for organic, spray free. And they had, and obviously modern dairy, if you can find raw dairy, if you can tolerate it in its best possible form. You know, some people really sensitive to even raw dairy or any type of dairy. So, but if you can tolerate it and you thrive on it, then go for it. But so the attack started sort of coming thick and fast through that period, and I released many books. And then I mentioned the documentary The Magic Pill when that was released, and it went global, and we showcased Indigenous Australians reversing type 2 diabetes over a two-week period. We showcased a child with autism that changed their diet, that became the behavior changed in miraculously so many beautiful ways. We showcased how people could get off certain medications or reduce certain medications in this documentary. So when that came out, we had the Australian Medical Association president at the time call for it to be banned from Netflix, saying it was a dangerous documentary that promoted all that I just said: organic fruit and vegetables, well-sourced meat and seafood. They're calling for that to be banned, but not banning of junk food advertising or anything like that on television. Like, that to them was the most dangerous thing they'd ever seen. And then the question is, why? You know, and one thing that Bitcoin emphasizes, and that I learned early on, is follow the money. Follow the money and you will get your answer. So with this information, who is it really hurting? Well, it's not hurting the individuals or the communities or the population that adopt this style of eating, because I shared thousands and thousands of anecdotal stories of people that adopted a 10-week program that I put out there. I had 100,000 Australians opt in to do this 10-week program. And out of the 100,000 people that did this over 10 weeks, not one person said they got sicker or became unhealthier or became sicker over that 10-week period. What I did get from those 100,000 people is I shared thousands of stories of people improving their health, getting off pharmaceuticals, reducing pharmaceuticals, miraculous stories, right? So the question is, who is this hurting? So if 80% of chronic illness is lifestyle related, and the mainstream media will have you believe that lifestyle is your fitness, that you need to be out there running marathons and going to the gym 5 days a week. Nothing wrong with that if you can, if you're adapted to that sort of training. But so if 80% of chronic illness can be stopped through lifestyle changes, and I believe the biggest lifestyle change is the food that we eat. I've said this before, I've said it many times. Could you imagine if hospital visits were cut short by 80%? Could you imagine if doctors' visits were cut short by 80%? They lost 80% of their patients, customers, clientele in the space of 6 months or a year. What would happen to the pharmaceutical industry is if they lost 80% of their revenue because 80% of the people that were on their pharmaceuticals no longer needed them, or they needed them in smaller amounts. The whole system would change very, very rapidly. The healthcare system would change. And we're seeing the inklings of that with Bobby Kennedy Jr. in his role as head of Health and Human Services. And even today, he was interviewed by Tucker Carlson. And he was sharing some pretty powerful insights that a lot of us have known for a very long period of time. And now it seems to be just slowly starting to get out there into the mainstream world. So this is who it hurts. It hurts the pharmaceutical industries. It hurts the medical associations. It hurts the doctors' associations. It hurts so many people in their chosen fields, which hurts the bottom line of their industries and their take-home salaries. So COVID came along, and I was pretty much one of the only high-profile people in Australia to speak out. I saw there were others in the United States that were speaking out, but here in Australia, I was sort of a lone wolf. I mean, there were many people speaking out, but they didn't have the platform that I had. So, I was urging caution and basically calling it a scam and a hoax, that the mask wearing, the social distancing, the intended vaccine rollout that was coming, that, just use common sense. They want to lock us inside. What's that going to do? It's going to create instability for us, insecurity, fear. It's going to take us away from being in nature. It's going to take us away from human connection, which is what we talk about in the books and we know brings great health to us. What's wearing a mask going to do for us? You know, it's going to be problematic for us. You know, there's so much evidence out there that shows that wearing a mask is just not great for our long-term regenerative health. And then taking pharmaceutical products that haven't been tested, I mean, that in itself is common sense. It's like, yeah, maybe there needs to be more testing done on this and a longer time frame for these tests to come out before we take a product that, to 99% of us, probably doesn't, the whether you believe in COVID or not, doesn't really cause any harm to any of us, the majority of us. So I called sort of bullshit out on the majority of that that time, and that didn't sit too well with with the authorities over here, and then Facebook.
So what was the fallout? Banned on social media? Did you lose professional opportunities? I imagine. What was the
banned, deplatformed off Instagram and Facebook, and I had 1.75 million followers on Facebook, 350,000 on Instagram. I wasn't on Twitter or X, lost 15 business partnerships, and yeah, the list goes on and on. And it brought me to Bitcoin. So I'm grateful for that, because once you see Bitcoin for what it represents, it ticks so many boxes of I guess, the journey that I went through to go, okay, you know, there actually is solutions out here for people that are wishing to create a better life for themselves, that removes themselves from another corrupt system. And, the health system, unfortunately, there is a high level of corruption in there, just like the financial system. I don't need to tell you, but we understand that there are mechanisms at play that have been in play for a very long time, and the journey that I went through really took me down a deep path of I never wanted to really understand money or finances or wealth in that regard, but being forced to look at this and then seeing what happened through that COVID era, through the Canadian truckers, for instance, their protest and other people's bank accounts being frozen, you know, everything sort of directed me and many others to what is Bitcoin. and what does it represent? And is this a solution for humanity? And I honestly believe it is. You know, I'm all in on Bitcoin because, you know, as Saylor says, you should study it for 100 hours or 1,000 hours. I think I've done 10,000 hours over the last 5 years. And I'm still in my infancy of understanding it, the many layers to Bitcoin.
Yes. I couldn't agree with you more because I, like I said, I've been in Bitcoin 3 years and, I feel like all I'm doing is playing catch up sometimes. You just can't read enough books, listen to enough podcasts to like fully appreciate the revolution that it is. So I'm guessing, so we met because you came up to our booth after I spoke. It sounds to me, so the general premise for anyone who wasn't at BTC Prague, I don't think my speech will be out by the time this podcast comes out. The premise was the importance of using Bitcoin as money, as currency. Like we need to build this circular economy, not just, I mean, hold it. I think savings is a use case, but I think it's an incomplete use case and we need to build this future that we want to see. But I wonder if maybe what resonated would have been my premise of beyond saving in Bitcoin, spending in Bitcoin, taking self-custody, like opting out of the fiat nonsense, opting out of the fiat world. And so I gave like some examples of, we've removed our kids from the education system. We've opted out of fiat health insurance. My diet has obviously completely transformed. The amount of sunlight I get without any sunscreen ever is, I mean, just, it's an order of magnitude larger than it had ever been. And so there are all these like small changes that I think individuals can make that set you one degree further removed from all of the bullshit really that you're talking about here. And there, what I've discovered, and I'd be curious if this is your experience, is just when you think you've like sort of dialed in these different aspects of your life, you find some new rabbit hole to go down and you're like, oh, I can't believe I'm still doing that. Like that's a fiat thing. Time to, you know, learn about this new thing. And, you know, for me, like right now it's, what were we lied to, lied to about in our history books and, you know, these other things. And so it feels never ending. I'm curious, like, are there other, besides diet, health, some of the things we've talked about in more detail and obviously follow the money broadly, are there other like rabbit holes that Bitcoin's taking you down in the last 5 years?
Yeah. I'm fascinated by the, Jason Lowry software, thesis. Yeah. For my head to wrap, I wouldn't call myself an academic, you know. I was really good at maths at school, mathematics. You know, that was where I excelled in my wheelhouse. But a lot of the other subjects that I learned at school and studied at school, they didn't really interest me. And it's fascinating that Bitcoin is obviously one part of it is math, so it stimulates that part of me that really loves systems, organization, one block every 10 minutes, the whole clockwork system of it. You know, I love that. I get off on that type of thing, you know. And the other rabbit hole, so Jason Lowry, the software, you know, because, yeah, fuck, when I flew to Prague, I flew from Brisbane in Australia to Singapore for a night, then to Dubai, and then Dubai to Prague. And it was interesting, when I was flying to Dubai, you know, the shit that was happening between Iran and Iraq and the United States was going on, and the planes were diverted and then they were delayed. And I'm like, fuck, I'm in the Middle East, you know, going to Prague, but I'm in the Middle East for a day. And, just that, those thoughts, like there's wars going on in the world, like just there, like an hour by plane, half an hour by plane away, people are bombing each other. If you believe in that, that's happening, you know, which, you know, there's great evidence that would say that's real, you know, and it's not AI or manipulated or CGI, just a create the illusion of war, even though some people probably believe in that type of thing, you know. But where I'm going with this is, you know, it's 2025. There's people bombing people in different parts of the world and murdering people in these wars of tribal wars or land-based wars or religion-based wars or fucking whatever it is. And we've been doing this shit for a very fucking long time. Like a long time. Tribal fighting and blah, blah, blah over just possession and property and land and resources and religious beliefs. And like, it's just, for me, it's beyond ridiculous that this still exists. And when I read and try to conceptualize somebody like Jason Lowry talking about soft war and that Bitcoin potentially has a role in diffusing some of this, if not all of it, you know, and that's to be seen. I find that such a fascinating thing that Bitcoin may help find a solution or create the solution. that to me, because what else is there, you know, except more of the same, like throwing toys at each other because tantrums over religious ideology or property borderlines. And, you know, it's a mess. How do you fix that?
Yeah.
Is Bitcoin the answer? And I don't know, but it's a pretty fucking compelling thesis or argument that perhaps it can. And could you imagine in 10, 20 years if that came to be, like, yeah, there'd be plaques of Satoshi all around the world. Like, it might create another fucking religion, you know?
Yeah, Nobel Peace Prize for sure. Yeah, no, that's always one of the more interesting ones for me. I have not. So I remember when Jason Lowry's thesis came about, and it must have been 2022, 2023, somewhere in that time frame. I heard him on a few, because that's kind of when I came into Bitcoin. So I was just trying to figure out what the hell was going on. I remember thinking, this guy seems really smart, and it made sense, and he got so much backlash. I think there are a lot of people like us who find it very intriguing, but he got a ton of backlash from people who I would have assumed were like, oh yeah, this makes a lot of sense. I think they had there seemed to be like an issue with the way, like the terminology, like the war-based terminology, and like his Bitcoin is protected under the Second Amendment, you know, the right to bear arms here in the U.S., not the First Amendment. And so it was like, I think people felt like they were kind of, he was dumping on their peaceful revolution. It made it sound warlike. When I think at the end of the day, his thesis was, as you described, like, no, it could diffuse war. To me, that's a really interesting one, because war seems to be this, well, first of all, it's ugly and messy and deadly. And I've got a son now, and I imagine what his future might look like, you know, 15, 20 years from now. And so that matters a lot to me. But really, like at the end of the day, what just had never crossed my mind, it, to me, like the concept of war, especially war in the Middle East, just was, it was like, yeah, well, we breathe, and also there's war in the Middle East. And, you know, like that's just the way of the world. Never occurred to me that the only way that these sorts of things are funded is by more debt, more money printing. And if you had money that you could eventually run out of, short of providing tremendous value to the world and accumulating more of it accordingly, you can't fund that war. Like it simply doesn't happen, or it only happens for a few weeks until you run out of money. And since you can't print more of it, you just got to stop and march home and wait until you accumulate more for the next war. But then you have to decide, is it really worth that investment of capital if I only have so much of it? And this is, you know, I've been talking about like the prospects of more war, the elimination of the inevitable, you know, wars because of Bitcoin. And it's like, well, and here we are again, right? Like Trump comes into office and like, I don't even know what was going on. We're like bombing Yemen or something. I'm like,
like, I need to go look at a map to remember. I know roughly where Yemen is, but like, I don't know, you know, I know where Iran is because we've been talking about Iran being, you know, our biggest enemy outside of China and Russia forever in the West. But yeah, man, I couldn't agree with you more. It's just, it's insane. And when people begin to like really think through and process why that is even possible, I think you, back to your original point, you have to follow the money and you have to see who's benefiting. Why is this necessary? And more importantly, maybe why is it even possible? And it's just fiat nonsense. And it's something I think that the more people we can get just opting out of on an individual basis, we can begin to like be that change that we see in the world. And we can just remove our votes from that system into something different and better and more prosperous. So anyway, that's a long rant, but for me, the whole war thing is a really big deal. And it's why I think we need to use Bitcoin as currency, because we need to sort of inject our demand in the marketplace that this is something that we want to use to exchange value. Because if militaries aren't using Bitcoin to purchase their fighter jets and ammunition, do the forever wars end? And that's I think that's the big question mark. So I think that's an interesting one. You guys live a long ways from everything in Australia, man. So you had to fly to Singapore. Where did you say? Singapore, Dubai, and then on to Prague. So you're flying through a war zone, basically, or near a war zone.
Yeah, and I don't want to spend any of my sats, so to speak. So I'm flying economy on that journey too, and or coach, as you call it, I think in the States. So yeah, I 26 hours in a plane in coach. I am doing it in one go. I'm again, you know, I value my sleep and my body too much, but I can do 8 hours to 10 hours in economy in one stretch, you know. And I find I can do that and do it well without too much problem on the body. And you know, and it was great because when I got to Singapore, I landed mid-afternoon, so I got to sit by the pool at the hotel and I got 2 hours of sun. Next day I landed in Dubai middle of just after lunch, got to the hotel, got to the beach, which was great, at the hotel, and got 4 hours of sun. I'm like, I believe we're a solar panel, and all I want to do is get as much sun as I can with no sunscreen. And and then when I got to Prague, same thing. I got to the hotel, there's no beach and no pool, but I got to walk around the streets and get some sun, which was fantastic. So I did it well, but yeah, it is a long way. But I'm so grateful I got to go to Prague. I thought Prague was a tremendous event. Like Bitcoin Vegas was two different, very different flavors, so to speak, pardon the pun, talking about food. But both had so much to offer as well, especially for me. You know, I watched as many, I watched you, I watched so many different speakers, you know, just going back to school as a 50-year-old voluntarily to learn more about this space and being in a convention or a conference like that, you know, is just so powerful and so inspiring. And when I got home, I spoke to my wife and like, this is the way. This is the way, you know, for us, because it ticks so many of the boxes for us that, you know, again, are in parallel with, I want to live for as long as possible with great health, you know, however long that is, you know, whether it's till I'm 80, 90, 100, 110, I don't know, you know, I do quite sort of pretty fascinating sports, you know, like surfing and foil surfing and my home break that I surf at most days. A guy was chomped on the arm by a shark there 2 days ago, a young fella. He lived, thankfully. It's like, yep, I'm not going out by inflammation and obesity and dementia and Alzheimer's and heart disease and cancer. That's not my path. Perhaps it'll be a being eaten by a shark or something like that. But yeah, I don't know how long I'll be around for, but my intention is as long as possible, because I find this whole earthly experience such a beautiful gift, and there's so much to it to experience and taste and share and learn and that's my goal.
I mean, going out doing something you love because a shark got the best of you is a much better way than most people make it to their 80s and they're just limping across the finish line at best. And I think that's a very important mindset I think more people could have. So hey, real quick, before you sort of head for home, so what were you speaking about? I missed your panel. I think I met you after you'd already done your panel.
Yep.
Didn't know that you were going to be speaking, but you did like similar panels in Vegas and Prague. What were the topics specifically you were covering?
The one in Vegas, I was on a panel on the Genesis stage, and it was with Dr. Sean Baker, also. Okay. Matthew Lysiak, wonderful author who
Fiat
wrote
Food.
Fiat Food. Yeah, I'd interviewed him before, and I'd interviewed Dr. Sean Baker before, so I felt like I was in great company. And there was another fellow there, Doug from
Okefenokee Farms,
just north of Florida. So we had a panel talking about hobbling your health, basically, and choosing wisely, you know, through that orange pilled paradigm in relation to food and health and perhaps where you choose to live and the way in which you choose to look about around your health. So that was more a health focused panel. The one in Bitcoin Prague was more about freedom technology being cancelled, going through that whole process of censorship, and then, you know, rising from the ashes like a phoenix, you know, because I'm of the firm belief that, one, we create our own reality. So I created being cancelled for the journey that I've had to go on, and grateful for this journey. And then also the impetus from going through these sort of experiences to not reinvent ourselves, but re-express ourselves in the way that feels authentic to us. You know, and this book was, I spoke to my mate Alex Svetsky, who orange pilled me, who spoke at Bitcoin Prague on the stage. I said, what do you think about a book tying in health principles and ancestral diets and Bitcoin? He's like, yeah, if you feel like doing it, do it. So I spoke to my wife. I said, I think this is my next thing I'm going to do. I'm just going to self-publish it. And I'll just put it out there. And just going through the self-publishing of a beautiful cookbook with photos of recipes for every recipe. There's some
I was going to say, yeah, this is not like a lightweight, you know, like you put, this is proof of work right here. You can buy this on Amazon, right? Or like
it's on Amazon, Barnes & Nobles. It's expensive as a hard copy because it's print on demand. You know, I didn't print 1,000 of them because the printing costs come down, because I do not want to ship people their books. You know, that's not for me. You know, I choose my time wisely, but if anyone wants it in a hard copy, it's like $80 US, which is expensive, I know, but Apple iBooks as an ebook, I think it's like $9 or something, $9 or something like that. So if you don't need a hard copy, which most people don't, but if you want one, it's a really nice hard copy book for your coffee table, and it's, you could have the first Bitcoin recipe book. And I promise you, there is no Bitcoin cakes or fucking orange looking food in there. I didn't go down that path. I wouldn't do it to you. You know, I have too much respect for Bitcoin to ruin it with some cheap, cheesy looking fake food. You know, this is just real authentic food.
Some of the recipes, I mean, they really do look incredible. And you cover a lot. Like, I just opened it to lamb, which is something I love, but I don't eat often enough. I haven't looked real hard, but I'd love to find some quality local lamb around here because it's one of my favorites. I tend to just go for simplicity. So the benefit you've given me, besides the fact that you signed this for my whole family, gave it to me at no cost for me to bring home from Prague, which I deeply, deeply appreciate,
I feel like I now have like the toolkit to very quickly like begin mixing up my meals a little bit in the way that I just usually don't. I usually just go for simplicity. We've got young kids, so you know, often we're a bit expedient in sort of the manner in which we prepare for dinner. We always focus on protein, you know, fresh fruits, that kind of thing. But we could probably spice up our dietary lives a bit. So I would encourage anyone, check out the Primal Code.
I will just.
So I got one more question.
I'll throw this in as well. You're not to be a blatant seller or anything, but that came out this year, Healthy Food for Healthy Kids, which is a book I released in the United States, which is cheaper to buy because that was with Skyhorse Publishing and Children's Health Defense. So Bobby Kennedy Jr. is a friend of mine who helped me get this over the line with Children's Health Defense. And that's really for any new parents or people that are wanting to start a family. So there's baby food recipes in there, toddler food recipes, children's food, that type of thing. And it's all based on an ancestral approach to eating as well, with a wealth of information in there. So Skyhorse Publishing, who did that with us, they released Bobby's book on The Real Anthony Fauci too. So, and I've got a book coming out later this year with them, which will be published, so it'll be cheaper again, which will be the first Maha cookbook that comes out in a couple of months too. So
very cool.
Check that out.
Do you just love, I mean, you've published a ton of books. Do you just love writing, or do you just feel like, do you have something that you're like, okay, here's the next thing I have to say. I need to put this into the world, or is it maybe a combination of the two?
Yeah, it's a huge question. And I think it's one that many people struggle with, you know, purpose. I'm of the firm belief, and this is just my belief, if it doesn't resonate, please let it go. But our purpose here on earth is to express ourselves creatively in whatever expressions they are, you know. And for me, it's food and writing and interviewing people on my own podcast and sharing information, making documentaries. That's what I love to do, and I love to surf, expressing myself creatively in that realm as well. For others, it's gardening, it's physical activities, it's art, it's music, it's whatever, you know. And I honestly believe the more time we can spend expressing our creative talents and pursuits and being curious about life, then the more flexibility and joy and youthfulness we will have, you know. Some people are all about anti-aging and longevity, and I truly believe the key for that is finding what your passions are and doing them as often as you can. It's a pretty simple formula. And if you don't know what your passions are, go back to childhood. What used to get you excited as a child and brought joy to you, you know, we all remember what that was. And if you can't remember, or if you're unsure or things have changed, just be curious. Enroll yourself in a dance class or a music class or a painting or an art class or whatever it may be, or a Bitcoin coding class or whatever. I don't know, you know, just be curious. And yeah, that seems to be the recipe for a lot of people for a long, long, happy life.
Yeah, I'll tell you, 5 years ago, I would have rolled my eyes at you saying that. I would have just written you off as some sort of hippie, and I couldn't agree more now. I think that, like, these are the sorts of things that, well, I think probably having kids now, and I think about the lives I want them to have and the sort of, like, these sort of paths that were just like, you know, and I've got a great family, but I had in my mind that, like, this is the way that things need to be. I need to focus on X, Y, and Z. And there's not a lot of room for deviation because those are the important things. And having kids, and I think honestly, going down this Bitcoin rabbit hole, and you begin to see art and people making art, like Bitcoin art, and people publishing Bitcoin cookbooks, like taking some, like, this skill, this proof of work that they've crafted and putting it into something that other people can use and benefit from. I don't think there's much more value you can, like, this is the valuable product that everyone has in them to put out into the world. The question is just, like, what's the nuance? Is it cooking? Is it music? Is it art? And for a lot of people, they love macroeconomics. And so they get on a Bitcoin podcast and they teach someone like me who doesn't have that background a ton of stuff, right? And, like, they could sit there and just nerd out about that stuff all day. And it's all good. So I agree with you. Find what it is that you're good at. And if you can't make a career out of it, because not everything is economically profitable and you do need to earn an income and, you know, make sure you make ends meet, but find those avenues in which you can do those things. So I absolutely love that. Okay, I've got one more question for you. The question I ask everyone at the end of the show, what is an unpopular opinion that you hold, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with this opinion?
Does it have to be about Bitcoin?
Can be any. Saifedean was on the podcast. He said that he hates movies. He doesn't understand why anyone watches movies. So it can be really anything.
An unpopular opinion. Wow.
Do you have any popular opinion? Pete's trying to think of a popular opinion that he has.
Exactly. The unpopular opinion. If we're talking about health.
Okay.
You know the answer to your issue already. No one knows it better than you. And all you need to do is be vulnerable enough to ask yourself the question over and over and over until you get to the answer.
Yeah, interesting. So you think, would you sort of apply that? So even you said health sort of generally, so even beyond like diet, you know, you've got this like relational trauma or something, or, you know, like this other thing that's eating away at your health, or you've got these habits, or, you know, maybe it is diet. Maybe it's the fact that you like, there's something in your health journey that, you know, deep down somewhere is the thing that's off, or one of several things that's off. But most people maybe don't have the courage or the inclination to dig deep enough to uncover it. Is that maybe a way of sort of framing it?
Yeah. And there's different techniques and different options out there for the uncovering. You know, there are psychedelics, different talk therapies, blah, the list goes on. You know, there's ways to get to the root cause, as they say. And not one is better than another, depending on what you're attracted to or what you're willing to face. And that can be a big one for people because, you know, without this will be, can be quite triggering for people because some people like to have to blame other things. Oh, it's my genetics, or it's because I was physically or sexually abused or emotionally abused as a child. And I will blame that person for the way that I am now, you know, because it's not me. It's an external force, or it's a financial situation, or I was laid off by my job by my prick of a boss, even though I'm better than them, you know. So a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people project their excuses onto the external world, whereas the external world is really just a mirror of our own opportunities for us to discover who we are, you know. All of these instances in our life that we have created or we believe have happened to us are just invitations to identify why that triggers us or what that experience is that it can offer us to overcome or, I guess, bring into a state of neutrality. I mean, this is probably, we could do a whole nother podcast on this because this is something I love talking about, but it's very hard to sum up in a minute or two. Yeah, all I would say is every opportunity or every issue that happens in our life, look at it as an opportunity for adventure to get to know who you are. Because the ultimate question, I believe, that needs to be asked from an individual point of view is, who am I? Who am I without my inherited or adopted beliefs from my parents, my family, my culture, my religion, my geographical location in which I was born, my race? Who am I? You know, and we can get to a fundamental base truth of who am I? And I'll leave it there because that's the mystery for each and every one of us to work out. And ultimately, it's one answer. But I'm not going to give you that answer.
We'll have to have you back, and you can elaborate more, and we can dig into that. Pete, this has been so much fun. Why don't you give a handoff? Tell people where they can find you, your books, anything else you want to share?
For sure. I'm back on Instagram as Chef Pete Evans. And I'm on X. I only joined X like a few months ago. Chef Pete Evans X, I think it is on there. I don't really post too often anymore. I just share some recipes here and there. That might change in the future. I don't know. But at the moment, I'm laying low. And that's probably about it. And if you want any of the cookbooks, just type in Pete Evans cookbooks into Google and Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Apple iBooks or wherever. And they're collector's items. When I was cancelled, they destroyed most of my books that were in print, like proper modern-day book burning, which I thought was pretty interesting.
It's a badge of honor, my friend.
Yeah. But I want to thank you, Michael, for having me. I never expected to be on your podcast. When I gave you the book, I was just inspired by your talk. You know, I came from the heart, and it no doubt penetrated a lot of people's hearts that were in the audience. And thank you to everybody that's tuned in today. And please, again, anything that I've said that doesn't resonate, let it go. I'm not wanting to change anybody's point of view, but eating well does seem to tick a lot of boxes, just like Bitcoin does.
Amen. Yeah. Well, Pete, thank you so much, man. Look forward to catching up with you soon. You take care. Have a good day. I'm going to go get some sleep here soon, and we'll talk again soon.
Cheers, brother. Love you. Thanks, mate.
Cheers. And that's a wrap. Again, hope you enjoyed my conversation with Pete. Love that guy. He is awesome. Make sure you check out his cookbooks. This really is such a cool book. So many recipes. He has truly put in the proof of work. So check him out. Go support him. Follow him on Instagram, X, anywhere you can find him. Of course, if you need help with Bitcoin in proper self-custody, get it done the right way the first time, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We'd love to walk you through how we help you get it done right. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We also help with online privacy, setting up privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option. Tons and tons of people in Australia and Europe, especially right now, even the US, looking for an alternative to where they're currently living, whether it's a worst case scenario or they just want to move to a freedom-loving tropical climate, and we can help you get there. So again, go check out thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can follow us on X as well. We're at @thebitcoinway_. You can follow me there @theothermjordan. Until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.